This week, in a conversation I had with someone, I was reminded why I am a pastor and why I believe the church community is a community that needs to exist. This was a conversation in which I had invited someone to come in, hoping that I could provide some pastoral care to the person. And as we were in conversation about the many difficulties going on in this person's life, the person said to me, "I have sought out this person who is really difficult in our congregation because I believe I need to be friends with that person, because I believe this is what Jesus calls us to. Jesus calls us to really love the people who are difficult." Now, she didn't know at all what I was going to preach on today, and I didn't go off into what my sermon was going to be about. But I sat there and I thought to myself, oh, she is so much better than I am. Because it's so hard to get ourselves into the mode of loving people who are difficult, even people that are part of our very own community. And she reminded me once again what it is that the church is primarily about. Martin Luther King Jr. talked about it as building the beloved community, this idea that all people are worthy of love and respect and dignity equally. Martin Luther King Jr. didn't want there to be white power or black power or any other power. What he wanted there to be was human power. And his vision of building the beloved community was based on this vision from Jesus, that we would love everyone, and particularly those who are difficult for us to love. The beloved community was based on, in part, what we get here in Matthew. Now remember for a minute that Martin Luther King Jr. was also a pastor. Don't you know he had people in his congregation who drove him up the wall? Don't you know that there, I'm talking about him, not me. Don't you know, I just had to clarify that. Don't you know that there were people in his congregation who tried to tell him how to do his job? There were people in his congregation who thought he should do this and shouldn't do this. And every day he had to live with his own abilities and inabilities. And in the midst of it all, tried to hang on to this deep, deep call, to this vision of beloved community, that every person would be given equal love, equal worth, equal dignity, equal respect. I want to explore a little bit of how we get from love your neighbor to this part that we read today, love your enemy. How did Martin Luther King Jr., how did Gandhi, how did so many others take on this concept of the vision that was laid out here? How did they get to that place? So I want to start with a long time ago, when civilizations were just being formed. It was all about survival, right? It was all about a particular group being able to survive. And so a lot was put into protecting one's family or group or community. And anybody that was seen as a threat to that group or family or community was done away with. And in most cases, anybody who was not part of the group was seen as a threat. They were considered to be the other. And so usually the solution was to just kill them. And then we can continue on with our survival. By the time we get to the days of the Old Testament, we read about a people being formed. The Hebrew people were being formed, the Israelites. They were formed as God's chosen people. And what we have in the Old Testament is this very distinct group of people, beloved by God, special in the sight of God, against the world. At least it reads that way sometimes. It feels like it is the people of God and God against the world. And so early on, anyone who was not Jewish, anyone who was not an Israelite, who was not a part of the chosen people of God, was seen as the other. They were, in essence, the enemy. And so we read about all these fights between God's people and this group and God's people and this group. And that's kind of the Old Testament. Somewhere in there, we read, love your neighbor as yourself. Your neighbor was part of your group. Your neighbor was within your walls. Your neighbor was one of you. Love your neighbor as yourself. Well, it always happens that living in community is not as easy as it sounds. And so eventually there also came some other instructions. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. In other words, don't get more retribution than what you should. Don't take a life for an eye. It should be an eye for an eye or a tooth for a tooth. And so there was instruction about how to live as community together. Take care of your widows. Take care of the children. Eventually, though, we get to the New Testament. Jesus comes on the scene and is all about reinterpreting the law. Yes, this is the law, and let us take it a step further to how we need to live. So Jesus was like the new sheriff in town. Here's the law now. If you think it was enough to love your neighbor and hate your enemy, guess what? Not enough anymore. Here's the new law. Love your neighbor and go a step further. Love your enemy. And again, remember how that would have been heard in part is love anybody who is the other, anybody who is outside of your belief system, outside of your morality system, outside of your geographical area, outside of everything else that is like you. Love that person. And pray for God's blessing on the people who bring evil to you. That's a pretty tough one. But it starts with love the people who are other. When I was in seminary in Princeton, New Jersey, I worked for a time at a church right outside of Princeton. And my mentor at that church was a woman who was in her late 40s, and she was a first-time pastor, but had tons of life experience. She was one of the first people who schooled me, as we say, who instructed me in this whole idea that the church needs to be involved in social justice. That was a new concept for me. And she taught me by the way she lived. She was a woman who had been married to a man. They had three children. And after all of their children were born, he came out as gay. They ended up divorcing and stayed very good friends. And what she said to me about that, as she talked to me about it, is that she didn't know what it meant or what it was like to be gay. What she knew was that her husband needed to be able to be himself. And so rather than use that as an excuse to to be against and preach against and live against gay people, she used it as a door into a whole new experience. She immersed herself in the gay community and in all of his friends. She got to know them. She listened to their stories. She used it as a way to be curious about something she knew nothing about, and it deeply informed her belief and how she was a pastor. Later on, she was single for many years, later on remarried, and her new spouse engaged in something that we call cross-dressing. She knew nothing about it. She was, again, kind of like, wow, this is all new. Again, used it as a way to open a door into a community that she knew nothing about. She used it as a way to understand, get to know, have a glimpse on something that she knew nothing of. And she continues to do that. She was the person who took me on my first March on Washington. And I will never forget that experience. And then toward the end of our time together at that church, she took me to New York City for a day to a workshop with a guy named Desmond Tutu. So we spent a day, about 20 of us, in a workshop with Archbishop Desmond Tutu from South Africa and learned from him about this concept. Now, King called it beloved community. In South Africa, there is a word called Ubuntu that is very similar and also based on this vision that Jesus had. Ubuntu is the idea that I am a person because you are a person and we are all persons. So I am a person because you are a person. It is a similar idea. Tutu has said so many times that I am not free unless you are also free. And so all of our work is trying to make it so that everyone lives with worth and dignity in freedom. I read an article recently by Desmond Tutu that he wrote in the most widely circulated newspaper in Uganda. It was when all of the anti-lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender legislation was coming before the Ugandan government. And Tutu wrote a letter and tried to remind Ugandans of God's vision for the world. I want to read you what he said. He said, "One thing that Ugandan legislators should know is that God does not discriminate against members of our family. God does not say black is better than white, or tall is better than short, or football players are better than basketball players, or Christians are better than Muslims, or gay is better than straight. No. God says, love one another. Love your neighbor. Love your enemy. God is for freedom, equality, and love." So again, another vision that stems from this command of Jesus that we love our enemy, that we love all of those who are other. And there are two ways that I know of to get us there. Two things that can put us on that path. One is to believe deeply in King's idea of this mutuality, that we are all part of the same fabric. And it's a fabric of mutuality. That we would believe deeply in Tutu's idea of interconnectedness. I am not free until you are free. I am not loved until you are loved. I am not worthy of dignity until you have your dignity. Once we believe so deeply in our interconnectedness, it informs all that we do and say, the ways that we live. The second thing that will put us on that path is what I was trying to share with the kids this morning. It is literally a change of habit. We all know what it is like to say in our minds, oh, that's weird. Oh, he's weird. Oh, she's weird. Oh, that is so wrong. Oh, he is so wrong. Oh, she is so wrong. We know what that's like. When my mentor, Jean, was showing me all these different ways of living, I was not in that kind of place where I was curious or open. I was in a place, particularly in terms of my religious life, where everything depended on my being right. I had been given a theology that was carefully constructed and completely dependent upon its rightness. And so as I saw her living in such a different way, I was flabbergasted. It has taken me many years to get up to get on that path myself. And I'm new on that path still. It's been a lot of years, but I'm new on that path. To change one's habit from needing to be right, needing to be better, needing to be whatever it is we need to be, and simply being curious and open and affirming of otherness, that's a lifetime of changing a habit, and it is exactly the habit to which we are called to change. And going back to what I started with, this is one of the things that makes a faith community different than most every other group or organization you will belong to. This is our primary call as a faith community, that we would build this kind of community, that we would be intentional about changing our habits. And so may we be. Amen.